This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Robert Schumann wrote that his first symphony was born in a fiery hour, and it must have been a very powerful hour because it was not only his first orchestral composition, but it kicked off an entire year of orchestral writing. Schumann had spent the first 9 years of his career as a composer writing only music for solo piano, mostly miniatures. In 1840, the year of his marriage to piano prodigy Clara Wieck, he wrote over 100 songs. Clara had written in her diary the year before that it would be best if Robert composed for orchestra. His imagination cannot find sufficient scope on the piano. His compositions are all orchestral in feeling. End quote. Schumann had first tried writing a symphony when he was 22, and he'd made a fair amount of progress when he abandoned it after a performance of the first movement was a failure in 1833. But after that year of song in 1840, he jumped with both feet into the world of the orchestra, writing his first two symphonies, although the second was later revised and published as his fourth, his overture Scherzo and Finale, which he sometimes called his Symphonette, the beginnings of another symphony, which he later adapted for his piano suite Bunte Blätter, and a fantasy for piano and orchestra, which later became his piano concerto. That first symphony took him less than a month to complete, which was all the more amazing since it was not only his first orchestral piece, but one of his first of any kind written in the classical sonata form, which Mozart and Haydn had perfected and which Beethoven had transformed. In fact, Beethoven's shadow is all over Schumann's first symphony, just as it was 40 years later for Schumann's protege Johannes Brahms and his first symphony. But Brahms took Beethoven's symphonies as models for his own. Schumann was more interested in Beethoven's late piano sonatas, which took the classical sonata form, exposition, development, recapitulation, and stretched them to the breaking point in search of what composer John Harbison has called a new kind of narrative style. Schumann was drawn away from the lessons of the past more than he was drawn toward them, and the result is five symphonies that are problematic, risky, personal, original, inspired, and as fresh as spring. Even though it was never the official title, Schumann always referred to his first symphony as The Spring. He told his friend, the composer Louis Spohr, that he had written it with a vernal passion that sways men even into old age and surprises them anew each year. Description and painting were not part of my invention, but I do believe that the season in which this symphony was born influenced its structure and helped make it what it is. End quote. That season was January and February, so the overall mood of the symphony is not spring itself, but the longing for spring in a cold and gray Leipzig winter. The symphony also had a literary inspiration, one of the spring ballads by Adolf Böttger, two lines of which are secretly set in the opening phrases, O Wände, Wände, deinen Lauf, im Tale blüht der Frühling auf. O turn, and change your course, now in the valley blooms the spring. Schumann was a poet himself in his youth, and you don't have to look too hard to find hidden words behind the notes of most of his instrumental music. Schumann had originally planned to give each movement a title. The first was to be called Beginning of Spring, and he had written to the first conductor that, I should like the very first trumpet entrance to sound as if it came from on high, like a summons to awakening. End quote. But then the music takes a dramatic plunge towards the key of D minor. There there is something almost sinister here. Are these the sounds of winter's death struggle? Schumann also wrote, "Further on in the introduction, I should like the music to suggest the world's turning green, perhaps with a butterfly hovering in the air, and then, in the Allegro, to show how everything to do with spring is coming to life." End quote. Schumann's world turns green by degrees. And he makes his way into the Allegro by a gradual acceleration, just like the onset of spring. The rhythm of that fanfare in the symphony's first notes provides the driving motor for the whole movement. The exposition passes quickly, and the development begins with more explorations of that initial phrase. The recapitulation begins dramatically. Though the tempo is still rapid, the return of the double fanfare is spread out so that it sounds like it did during the much slower opening. The second theme gives way to a double coda, a false ending. The first phrase brings the acceleration that we might expect at this point. But then the triumphant fanfare gives way to a tender, almost hymn-like song. This melody looks ahead to the next movement, and it's just one of the ways in which Schumann's symphonies break with the past and anticipate, literally, the future. The second movement is a song. Schumann originally titled it Evening. A different summons to awaken. Schumann was also anticipating the birth of his first child just a few months later. There's an echo of the Adagio of Beethoven's Fourth Symphony. At the end, the trombones enter for the first time since the end of the first movement, with another look forward, a mysterious-sounding coda that anticipates the scherzo. That quiet theme the trombones just played is translated into an energetic, quick, and strongly accented country dance. The title of this movement was to have been Merry Playmates, but the atmosphere changes quickly, and the country dance suddenly becomes calmer and more reflective. There are two trios, which are as much in contrast with each other as with what surrounds them. The first plays with a call and response, and eventually turns into a different kind of country dance. The the other is more on the wild side. The last word is a barely audible remembrance of the first trio. Schumann's name for the finale was Spring at its Height, though he later said that it was a farewell to spring, therefore not to be taken too frivolously. It begins with a call to attention for the full orchestra. The first theme bubbles along. A second theme in minor key alludes both to the last movement of Schumann's piano suite Kreisleriana and to Mendelssohn's first string quartet, written 12 years earlier. The development begins by darkening the scene, but only briefly. Schumann enters the recapitulation with a melancholy song from the oboe, which comes almost out of nowhere. Horn calls from some distant fairyland. And a sweet and bird-like cadenza for the flute. And from there on in, it's all high spirits to the end. One of the great ironies of Robert Schumann's legacy is that for the last century and a half, the conventional wisdom has been that he didn't understand the orchestra and that his symphonies are just inflated piano music. But we understand now that Clara was right after all, and that as with so many of his character pieces for the piano, Schumann's orchestral music was simply ahead of its time.